favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
You know, I liked the movie, so I went, like, I was like, oh,
good,
cool.
Good, you liked the movie. You missed the last 18 minutes, according to...
What?
When I went on to watch it, I was like, oh.
Oh, I fell asleep. So I came back to get the last 18.
Gotcha. Okay, so it was, like, paused, and I was like, there's 18 minutes left. And I was going to watch it one night. And I was like, there's 18 minutes left. I'm not going to watch it. Because I want Anthony to finish it, so I'm going to come back tomorrow and watch it.
I'm capable of using the scrolling mechanism.
I didn't want you to lose your spot. I was trying to be considerate.
Oh, no, but I always remember, because I fuck up and always restart all the time. So I always keep a note when I'm watching something, like, all right, this is where.
I'm just trying
to... No, it was very nice of you, but
I was trying to be considerate.
It's because, like, I used HBO and shit sometimes, and their app is horrible. So, yeah, they'll be like, oh, I'm sorry, were you actually way far ahead or behind? I'm like, no, I was somewhere not even close to this. Yeah.
All right, well, with that, let's go ahead and get started. welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible Pupils Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, and with me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Hey.
Still quarantined, still hanging out. How you doing?
I ate a Popeye's chicken sandwich today, and I'm, like, deep into Animal Crossing Day 2, so I'm on cloud 9, man. I'm doing
so
good.
You're hanging in there.
I'm fine. Yeah, this is a good quarantine now.
Right? Like, once you get settled, because as of today, it's been a month for me.
Oh, has
since
it?
Since I went into quarantine.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Wait.
For me.
What is it? Oh, wow. So, it'll be just a few more days after this for me, too.
Yeah.
Damn.
Oh, it's, I'm hanging in there. I've been cooking so much more, like, trying new things. And I'll be like, ooh, what is this gonna be like? Which, I've just never been that person. But now I'm just like, ooh.
All my gas money is going to discounted video games that I'm, like, barely playing. Now Animal Crossing fucked that up.
Well, yeah, because you got one of, like, the newest, brandest, like...
Yeah, I gotta use it because I paid the most for it. And then it's actually addicting.
Everyone's obsessed with Animal Crossing right now.
It's like being the odd man out with, like, my whole online crew, like, playing Animal Crossing.
Obsessed.
Animal Crossing. Well, you see it online, like, the little thing. And I'm like, Doom fucking 64, okay.
Well, like, I see all the memes, and I'm just like, I don't know what's going on, but I hope you guys are having fun.
Right? I'm not at the meme level yet. I'm still new. Like,
anyway, today we are covering one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, all-time?
Yeah.
This is, wow.
This is probably my favorite werewolf movie of all time.
You know
time.
What? I'm not a fan of werewolf movies, but this is, like, a really good werewolf movie.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of werewolf movies either, but this one is just, like, it just hits everything for me.
Ah, I can't wait to talk about, like, our... feelings on
yes.
it.
Yes. We are covering Ginger Snaps from 2000.
Damn.
So.
And just a quick alert. This actually really feels like a pre-9/11 horror movie. Like, this
does.
So
it
feels
has,
like it.
It has all of those elements. However, it does not have those pre-Columbine elements.
No. It's somewhere in between in that weird mix.
And we're going to talk about that because Columbine actually had a huge impact on this movie.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes total sense.
We're going to talk about it. But, of course, with any other episode... let's kick it off with a good old IMDb synopsis.
All right, hit us.
Two death-obsessed sisters, outcasts in their suburban neighborhood, must deal with the tragic consequences when one of them is bitten by a deadly werewolf.
Yeah, it's more of a coming of age. But
agreed.
The werewolf stuff is, like, just hammered in that
I
last 30
like,
minutes.
I feel like the werewolf stuff is, like... almost ancillary. Like,
yeah.
It's like a plot device.
Mm-hmm.
It just moves everything along. Anyway.
It's a deadly period.
There is a hilarious Letterboxd review.
That
goes on that.
Let's flip fast till we get there, yes.
So it was directed by John Fawcett, produced by Karen Lee Hall and Steve Hoban, and it was written by Karen Walton and John Fawcett. And then the cast, Emily Perkins is Bridget Fitzgerald. Catherine Isabel as Ginger Fitzgerald. does the title make sense now? But then, Chris Lemsch as Sam Miller and Mimi Rogers as Pamela Fitzgerald.
You did the best you could with that Lemsch name.
Lemsch? I have no idea. Because I don't know any of these people either.
It's weird.
So the release date, it came out at the Munich Fantasy Film Fest on August 1st, 2000. And then it had a Canadian-only wide release on May 11th, 2001.
Wow, this is niche.
It's super niche.
But, like, I feel like I see a lot about it.
We will get into it. Okay. It is a cult classic through and through. Like, to its, like, core, it is a cult classic. Like, so many people love it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason. We will get into it.
It feels like it. Definitely feels like
it. So, to get into it, it budgeted $4.5 million, Canadian dollars.
Okay.
And then it made $572,781 Canadian dollars.
That's how you know it's a cult classic right there. Uh-huh. Those numbers are cult classic numbers for sure.
Oh man, but again, it all has a reason. So yeah, no, that's why sometimes I love getting all of this information up top because mm-hmm. you're just like, what the fuck?
Explain disparity between all this shit. Yeah.
I can't, and we will. I promise.
Well, let's explain. Let's do it.
Let's explain.
All right, cool. Let's get into it. So, first thing to note: this film is very, very, very Canadian, and you can definitely see.
There's
some hard aboots. And by the way, we got a bunch of Canadian listeners recently. Like, hey.
Oh, hi.
Yeah, wonderful, guys. Thanks for listening. Don't listen to some of our previous episodes.
I'm not going to absolutely shit on Canada. We're not.
No, you've given us some very good horror movies.
I love, like, you gave us David Cronenberg.
And James Cameron. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Way to go, Canada. And ginger snaps. Anyways, so at the next line, it bleeds maple syrup, so you get the idea. I had to praise you before saying that one. Writer-director John Fawcett has said, quote, "I knew that I wanted to make a metamorphosis movie and a horror film. I also knew that I wanted to work with girls," end quote.
Is that an isolating sentence? Yes. Did I get the point he was trying to make?
Yeah,
also?
No, I get, yeah, that's... Probably shouldn't have paused so much in between all that. Okay. So, in January of 1995, he talked to screenwriter Karen Walton, who was initially reluctant to write the script due to the horror genre's reputation for weak characters, poor storytelling, and a negative portrayal of women. Next week's movie is going to be all this shit. Anyways, so, however, Fawcett convinced Walton this film would reinterpret the genre, which... bold. Very, very bold. But yeah, he definitely does not stick to the tropes with this one. Conversations with Fawcett led Walton to realize the error of her ways and that it was a genre ripe for reinterpretation. Quote, "Ginger Snaps presented an opportunity to make something sophisticated, to create real characters with real problems, characters that are human beings whose struggles are based on relationships. I found the horror element in the nightmare of trying to figure out who you are and who it is that you love. That was attractive to me. The opportunity to put a twist on the subject matter," end quote, explains Walton.
So I like that he was basically able to be like, listen, all of these pre-interpretations you have of the genre, bullshit.
Yeah.
We're going to have fun with it. Just write the fucking movie.
You're like, oh, this is what horror is, right? He's like, how about this? How about we don't do any of that? Okay.
Yeah. And they didn't.
Yeah, they no, they really. This is a very character based movie.
Oh God, they didn't. Oh God, the characters.
I know. Motion International committed to co-financing and Canadian distribution, and Trimark Pictures agreed to be the co-financer, U.S. distributor, and international sales agent. I imagine this is going to get kind of fucky, based on our information from earlier. So, the film seems ready to go into production by fall of 1998. However, negotiations with Trimark caused the producers to miss the budgeting deadline for Telefilm Canada, the Canadian federal film funding agency.
Love that Canada has like a federal film funding agency.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be, I don't know, in an ideal world that isn't corrupt.
Yeah.
Or fucked up.
We could use some of that kind of federal.
I just think that would be like Because it's, like, money for the arts. Like, it's literally, you know.
Yeah. But then again, knowing this administration, we'll end up getting, like, a triumph of the will kind of situation going on with the federally funded film. So, not the best angle.
I don't want it right now, but yeah. I'm saying in theory.
In theory, it'd be great.
Totally in theory.
We never have PBS.
In practice. We do. We have PBS. And you know what? Its funding gets cut every fucking year.
I know, dude. You can only. But good thing they have a Ken Burns to be like, what? Only have this much? Cool. We're going to talk about all this fucked up shit now.
You want to hear about the Dust Bowl song?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Fucking love Ken Burns. And for more on this Canadian funding federal thing, listen to our previous episodes on Black Christmas and My Bloody Valentine 3D, which, or not 3D, actually, the first one. The first one,
well, I mean, yeah. It's all in the same episode.
It's in the same episode, but yeah, we go into detail on how these guys help everyone else out, which is why Canadians, you guys, you've helped horror tremendously. Again, sorry about the maple syrup line.
I wrote it.
I would have wrote it, too. You remember our Dino De Laurentiis?
We're just assholes.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Okay, let's go.
We're jerks. We're jerks who like horror movies. We're horrible people. We are. We fucking hate you.
Rather than go ahead with only 60% of the funding, Hoban decided to wait a year for Telefilm's funding. During this, Trimark dropped the film. I fucking knew it.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Lionsgate Films, who Trimark would end up merging with in the year 2000, took Trimark's place, and Unipix Entertainment agreed to distribute the DVD.
That was Unipix.
My Latino-ness came out.
I know, I was like, Unipix? This is Canada.
Telemundo, what?
Telemundo saved the day, what?
Oh my god. They would totally, it'd be like bloodier. But if they hadn't waited, they would have prevented some unpreventable bad press. The very recent Columbine shooting and another shooting in Alberta suddenly thrust the public spotlight on violent teens. But we'll get to that in a minute. And I remember reading that in the wiki. I was like,
yeah.
I skimmed it and I was like, I'm going to wait till we do the episode because that's interesting.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Ugh. But these violent events also had an impact on casting the two main leads. While a casting director was easily found for Los Angeles, Canadian casting directors proved to be appalled by the horror, gore, and language in the screenplay. In American Psycho, around this time, there was the Outraged Canadians group as well that were like, you can't film here because this is bullshit. So...
And
it's in the same time frame, too. Yeah, so we love you, Canada, but in the year 1999-2000, you guys kind of lost us for a second.
It was not the time.
It was not the time. For more on that, listen to our American Psycho episode also. Again, sorry to Canadians in advance for that one. But and we love you.
I didn't say anything in that episode.
That's true. The Toronto Star's announcement that the Telefilm was funding a, quote, teenage slasher movie met with a flurry of debate and outrage in the media, which generated a significant amount of adverse publicity in proportion to the size of the project.
It is such a tiny fucking project, and everyone just, like, blew it out of proportion.
They're like, are you kidding me? They're funding this with how many dollars? Not enough to open a store? Cool. casting took place in Los Angeles, New York, Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. Wow, that's a good medley there. The producers searched for 6 fucking months, Jesus, to find the right actresses for the roles of Ginger and Bridget, but were having no luck at all when it came to this. So the role of Ginger was originally offered to Sarah Polley and Natasha Lyonne, but they both turned their asses down. Natasha Lyonne, though. Sarah Polley, I don't know what happened there.
But, like, Natasha Lyonne, can you imagine? Yeah. Like, I just... Because, like, she's a redhead, mm-hmm. so I can imagine, like, they kind of wanted a redhead for
yeah,
her. Which,
yeah,
Ginger. For Ginger. Fucking, I hate this shit. But I'm just, like, trying to imagine, because this is also, like, but I'm a cheerleader era Natasha Lyonne, so I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. This is, again, pre-9/11, different times. Emily Perkins and Catherine Isabel auditioned on the same day at their shared agency in Vancouver, reading to one another off camera. When their taped auditions arrived, screenwriter Karen Walton said that they were exactly as she had pictured the characters.
Yeah. Cool. And, like, pretty much immediately anyone who had watched the tape was just, like, blown away. Like, it was, like, one of those, like movie instances where, mm-hmm. like, people would, like, stick their head in from, like, another room and be like, what's going on? Yeah. Like, they were just, like, so into it. Like,
oh,
just,
it's like, them. It's them. That's
like,
the
how,
one.
Yeah, like, how they, like, played off of each other and, like,
I mean,
all that.
They have such good chemistry in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I mean, really
they
good.
They knew each other. Like, yeah. They went to school together. Like, they grew up together.
Oh, that totally comes out. It really does.
So...
Let's see. Although Catherine Isabel is supposed to be playing Emily Perkins' older sister, she's actually 4 years younger than Emily. Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That is interesting. attention then turned to the most important characters, the drug dealer and the mother roles. Mimi Rogers readily agreed to play the mother, Pamela, saying that she liked the black humor and comic relief in the role. Very, very good. Yeah. Totally dark humor.
I love the mom character.
Me too.
Like, she's hilarious.
And her just like, well, we gotta start over.
We'll just blow up the house and start over. Just the girls. It'll be fun. And I'm just like, what the fuck?
Robin Cook, the Canadian casting director, put forward one of her favorites, Chris Lemche?
I have no idea.
For the role of drug dealer Sam. After seeing Chris's audition, Fawcett hired his ass. Woo. So, you know what? He plays a really good scummy drug dealer kind of guy, though.
But, like...
But with a heart of gold.
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to say heart of gold. One of the Letterboxd reviews that did not make it into this was something along the lines of, how is it that the most... Or how is it that the nicest character in this entire town is the drug dealer?
Yeah. And he's like a hard, like, he's the town drug dealer. Like,
oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, he's a botanist. Like, he's straight up... botanist.
Oh my god, in this like fucking uptight town. Yeah, that's awesome. I dig it. He's a good character.
Yeah.
But principal photography took place between October 25th and December 6th, 1999, lasting a little over 6 weeks. That's not bad at all. Wow. Three of Toronto suburbs. I'm gonna fuck these up, Canada. I'm sorry. Etobicoke?
You did way better than I did. When I was writing it, I was like,
Etobicoke. No.
Like, I was like, it'll be okay.
It'll be okay. It'll be okay.
That's why I said it. I realized what I had said, and I laughed.
I laughed
so hard to myself for about 30 seconds.
Oh, my God. I'm going to find a YouTube video with this pronunciation.
Oh, please do.
If they show up on our fucking pod demographics, next episode, I'm sorry. Brampton is another one, though. That's easier. And Scarborough served as the suburb of Bailey Downs, which is a cool I like that name.
It's a really
I should have named my name. Animal Crossing town that one.
What's the name of it, Anthony?
It's Fuentecota. I was between Fuentefornia and Fuentesoda. But
Like Fuentesoda.
Fuentesoda would have been good.
But, like, you know.
Yeah.
Fuentecota.
No, the Dakotas don't get no love. That was my reasoning right there.
Okay, I respect it.
I was also going to do Haddonfield, too, but I was like, no, you know, two on the nose there.
I mean, that would have been funny.
Yeah.
I would have done it, but that's fine.
You can still buy the game.
I'm probably not going to anytime soon.
Get a Switch Lite. They're cheaper.
I know, but okay, I thought I heard my cat, and I was about to be like, what the fuck?
But anyways, unfortunately, since they were filming predominantly outside in the middle of the Canadian winter, the cast and crew spent those 6 weeks constantly passing a cold back and forth to each other. Eek.
Gross.
Yeah, we've all been in an office where this shit happens.
Gross. Wash your fucking hands.
Yeah, no, good. Yeah, particularly now. Oh, I got a bandana today, too. So. Ooh, okay, Alex is showing me a candle right now that says wash your fucking hands in very nice writing.
Literally, like, wash your fucking hands.
And it smells very good, too.
Yeah.
I dig it. On the first day of shooting in the picturesque suburbs, all the still photographs for the title sequence were created. The bloody stage deaths drew a crowd, and Fawcett worried about upsetting the neighbors.
Because they literally were filming in the suburbs, and it was going to, you know, upset their delicate Canadian sensibilities.
Perkins and Isabel were covered in fake blood for the shots, and at the time, a homeowner's basement served as their changing room. Each time they needed to change, someone had to distract the homeowner's 4-year-old child.
Yeah, because they're, like, covered in blood.
Yeah. And, like, changing clothes. long shooting days pushed the earliest possible start later each day until the scenes written for the day were being shot after late into the night, much like our guys at Cabin Fever, consequently filmed not long after this particular film, too. The director of photography solved the problem by using diffusion gel and 418 kilowatt lamps, which generated enough light to be seen a mile high in the sky.
Ooh, that's a little lot beacon of light.
Right there, yeah.
That's a lot of light.
I always like it when they do that. It gives it like a weird, eerie look.
I think, like, the same thing, I mean, I said the same thing in Cabin Fever, but I think it's like this really subtle effect that mm-hmm. adds an eeriness to it.
It
does. Sure.
It gives it that like a horror feel.
Yeah.
Paul Jones was brought on as prosthetic effects supervisor and creature designer. The special effects force behind Blade, Bride of Chucky, and Hellraiser 2 through 4, John Fawcett, also insisted upon Jones hiring that all special effects were practical.
Yeah, he was like super anti-CGI for this entire film.
Which makes it age super good.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I totally agree. Like, I mean, the fact that like I'm watching this movie 20 years later.
20, fuck me, yeah.
Yeah, 20 years later.
20 years.
I almost said 10, Jesus Lord. 20 years later, and it ages so well.
It really does. No, that's
like,
true.
It's like pretty much like, I mean, yeah, it looks like a 90s movie, but like... only in like style, but even then, like that's what I dress like.
Yeah, well, that again, it's the style and the storytelling, because it's not like big theme or anything like that. It's kind of like it's a contained film.
That's the thing though, and that's one of the things that I love about it, is that it has that indie kind of feel to it.
Yeah,
that it doesn't have that big grandiose kind of big budget. Mm-hmm.
This is the theme. Like, yeah. No, none of that post 9/11 stuff right there.
Yeah.
No.
Agreed.
Okay. Once Jones was hired, he threw himself and his shop into production because there were dozens of prosthetic effects scripted. Like, a lot.
There were so many.
Yeah, there's
like,
a lot.
Ginger's whole transition is, like, crazy. And it's, like, it's so gradual throughout the movie that, like, even from scene to scene, there are changes that happen mm-hmm. that, like, all need different prosthetics.
Yeah, like, there's definitely a lot of work in this film like, for that kind of stuff. But the most important thing to design, of course, was the creature itself. Yeah, which is fucking gruesome. John Foss explains his vision. Quote, "I wanted it to be more skin and muscle than fur or hair. I really wanted to get away from the guy in a fur suit trap of other werewolf movies. I was going for a skeletal look. I wanted it to be more hellhound than werewolf, actually." End quote. Yeah.
And 100%. Totally, 100%. Yeah.
I mean, if they made fucking Lupin and Harry Potter look like this, I'd scare the shit out of
them. Yeah, for sure.
Oh my god. Well,
also, coincidentally, also entirely CGI.
Yes, yeah, that's true. They could have used this guy. But that was a good movie anyways.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Alfonso Cuarón, man. So, up for the challenge, Jones hired and flew in artists from London, England. Fresh off George Lucas's little-known film, The Phantom Menace? I've never heard of that one.
Never seen it. Yeah. Don't know her.
Who's Jake Lloyd? To sculpt the creature under his supervision while he concentrated on all the other effects with a team of a dozen local Toronto prosthetic artists. And they were probably like, oh, we got work.
They're like, Phantom Menace hasn't come out yet. We still have work.
We still have time.
I'm so sorry. I love the prequels, but yikes.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I still take it. We're not going to get into that discussion.
This is a horror podcast.
I forget which movie. Oh, it was Scream 2 when we talked about other sequels and we got into Attack the Clones like hard. So for that discussion that we are avoiding right now, listen to our Scream 2 episode.
Because if there's any conversation Anthony and I can sidetrack on any given day of the week, it is the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's because we do not agree. consequently, Isabel had to spend up to 7 hours in the makeup chair to create Ginger's metamorphosis and a further 2 hours to remove them. Fucking A.
Yeah.
Oof, that's about the same amount of time I've put in Animal Crossing so far right there. Yeah, that's a lot. often covered in sticky fake blood that required borax and household detergent to remove, she further endured wearing contacts that hindered her vision and teeth that meant she couldn't speak without a lisp. Fuck.
Yeah, she was fucked up.
Dude, but she sold it. She's like, all right, cool, one take, I did the thing, let's go. Next take. In a letter Isabel wrote to Last Podcast on the Left, she recounted a tale of her being in a rush from the facial makeup, and due to the location of the shooting, she accidentally got into a family van instead of a production fan to take her to set.
And she scared the shit out of an entire hockey family.
Oh my god. Dude, so she listened to the last podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, she's badass.
She's really
cool. I love her so much more now.
She's really cool.
Damn.
This is on an episode of Side Stories, mm-hmm. and they read it, and I was like, what? I like paused, and I had to rewind it, and I was like, Wait, what? And it was just like, the whole thing is she was talking about filming Ginger Snaps.
That's so cool.
This whole thing. And I was like, well, I'm going to put this in here because it's funny.
No, that deserves some recognition right there.
Yeah.
But with filming done, the film's final cut was turned out in just 8 weeks, an unusually short time for editing. Despite all this, editing was eventually nominated for a Genie Award. What's a Genie Award?
It's an award.
No, okay. I don't know if it's a good...
I've seen, like, Genie Awards before. Like, okay. I don't know. Obviously, it's not like an Oscar or anything, yeah. But, like, I mean, I've seen them before.
It's a really, really strange name for an award. But, despite this, I imagine that's a good thing. So, yes. Way to go. So, by late 2000, though, the film was ready to be released.
Woo.
So, let's see how that release went. Remember the numbers from earlier.
Ginger Snaps ultimately is a victim of poor marketing and even worse timing. So let's get into it. So Ginger Snaps premiered at the Munich Fantasy Film Fest in August of the year 2000. The next month, it played at the 2000 Toronto International Film Festival, where it briefly received media attention following the positive word of mouth it had built up from Munich. Although called one of the standouts at the Toronto Festival, attention died off and the film followed an unfocused release strategy, playing at various film festivals and building up more word of mouth. No one was promoting this fucking movie, and word was traveling almost exclusively via word of mouth. This is important later, but...
A poster.
Like, literally.
A poster.
Also, the poster had the... Do you want to know what the subtitle was for the poster for this movie?
What?
Hungry Like the Wolf.
I seen that. No, I was looking at...
I literally was like, I fucking hate you bitches.
Well, because I tried to get the art done for this one early. And yeah. I can't find shit that's good. Like, there's... Like, the marketing materials, I'm just like, oh, is this Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
Yeah, there's nothing. So Ginger Snaps was eventually released to Canadian cinemas in May of 2001. It grossed $425,753 Canadian dollars domestically, making it the fifth highest grossing Canadian film between December 2000 and November 2001. This is actually very good for Canada.
Well, okay. That's weird.
Yes. So...
That's big?
This is actually good for Canada.
All right, well, Canadian listeners, you guys need to go visit more theaters. That's not cool.
However, let me be clear. This film never got a wide release in the U.S., due probably to the Columbine Massacre that had happened mere months before its release.
Yeah, that makes sense.
To the best of my knowledge, if it did get any kind of release, it was very, very limited, but it was predominantly shown in Canada and the U.K., and even that got hindered dramatically, and we'll get into that right now.
Hmm.
So, thanks to its word of mouth and pretty much a whisper campaign, it almost instantly became a cult classic and has achieved significant video and DVD sales after the fact.
Yeah, and it's on Tubi.
Wow.
For free. You have no excuse, guys.
Oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Ginger Snaps was banned from certain cinemas in the UK even after that in 2001 as it was seen as promoting violence amongst teenagers. However, when the VHS was released later that year, it was one of the fastest selling horror films of the time.
See, now we have UK listeners, and we love that you guys listen literally every week. Thank you. But you guys have listened to our diatribes on how the UK handles this shit sometimes, and it always makes
the movie. You guys banned the Evil Dead for like decades.
Child's Play,
I'm more upset about the Evil Dead.
Well, still though, like the thing is, they put all this negative attention, and then it's like, oh, cool, you can't play this or do this, and when they finally bring it back, it's like, oh, look, everybody loves it, and actually made more money.
Yeah.
Just doesn't work.
So, most, this movie made a ton of its, like, money mm-hmm. from video sales.
I bet. This right before Blockbuster fucking died.
I mean, it still had time. This was in like the year 2000.
Yeah, it had like less than a decade though.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Point taken. Okay. So anyway, moving on to reviews.
Hey.
This film has an 89% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes based on 57 reviews. The average rating is 7.4 out of 10.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really good.
Cult classic, my friend. The site consensus reads, quote, "The strong female cast and biting satire, but of teenage life makes Gingersnaps far more memorable than your average werewolf movie or teen flick," end quote. Agreed.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Fucking biting satire. Shut the fuck up. Anyway, critics' praise was centered on the quality of acting by the two leads, the horrific metamorphosis reminiscent of Cronenberg, the use of lycanthropy as a metaphor for puberty, and the dark humor.
Canadians know how to do gore.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys.
They do it real well.
With Cronenberg and like, all, yeah, yeah, you guys got that shit down.
Scott Tobias of the AV Club wrote that the film was, quote, "seemingly left for dead," quote, after playing at the 2000 Toronto International Film Festival, but is now considered a cult film, as we previously went into.
Mm-hmm.
It is ranked 78 on Time Out London's list of 100 best horror films, Tom Huddleston calling it, quote, "the best teenage werewolf movie, period."
Take that, Teen Wolf, you piece of shit.
Well, also, we've spoken about Tom Huddleston on our Crimson Peak episode.
That's right. No, Tom Huddleston.
I did. That's what I said.
No, you said Hiddleston. Did right I really? Because remember, it's actually Tom Hiddleston
it's
with the mustache.
Tom Hiddleston. It's his evil. It's his alter ego.
It's his alter ego. That's
but
just...
I do agree with his consensus on this.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to his stance on Crimson Peak. Critics who panned the film thought the puberty metaphor was too obvious, the characters too over the top, especially the mother, and the dark humor and horror elements unbalanced. And I think this is just like the critics who just didn't get it.
Yeah, you know, no, what I for mean? Sure. 89% you...
Also, theory corner real quick for me. Because the film links lycanthropy to menstruation and features two sisters, Gingersnaps lends itself to a feminist critique, which was not missed by many critics.
I mean, it was pretty on the nose on this one.
Of course. Yeah. Of course it was. By simultaneously depicting female bonds as important and fraught with difficulties, Gingersnaps portrays the double binds teenage girls face. And that's a quote.
Mm-hmm.
And, quote, "Ginger is an embodiment of these impossible binaries. She is at once sexually attractive and monstrous, natural and supernatural, human, animal, feminine, and transgressive, sister and a rival," unquote. And I'm like, and
yeah, that's a good summation right there.
Literally, like, I could, like, talk about this movie forever, and I won't because we're on the time crunch here, but, so good.
They should do the IMDb synopsis.
Right? Theory corner all the time. Anyway, let's get into some Letterboxd reviews. So, on Letterboxd, this film has a 3.6 out of 5 rating based on 14,200 reviews. So, pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's really good.
On the grand scheme of things.
That beats the hell out of next week's film.
Kicking us off with Brad Pitt with 3.5 stars.
Yeah.
Quote, "Curing lycanthropy is as easy as an injection made from a common flower that you can buy at your local craft store. Damn, I wish someone had told Professor Remus J. Lupin this nifty piece of info." Sad face.
No, that's a flower only available in Canadian stores.
Yeah, so, yeah. Like, I was like, what the fuck is monk's hood? I've never heard of that shit. But 3 stars from Mondo Cinema. Quote, "Could one consider this a period piece?" You're welcome.
Oh, that was good.
You're welcome.
I love that one.
Willow McClay with 5 stars. This is an actual review. Quote, "Body horror by the way of Cronenberg influences on Canadian horror with central relationship complexities of something like Heavenly Creatures, a perfect women's horror picture," unquote.
Okay, I dig it. I dig it.
Restman with 3 stars, quote, "This movie would have turned out a lot different if it was called Snickerdoodles," unquote. I just write these for the humor.
Oh my
gosh. For the comic relief. And then finally, Sunday Revella with 4.5 stars, "I would die for Ginger Fitzgerald."
Oh my gosh.
Unquote. And wouldn't we all?
For sure.
So, the legacy of the film after moving on.
Yeah. Let's see how this all wraps up.
20 years later. Thanks to this film absolutely crushing the cult film title, despite its less than stellar performance in the box office, it got 2 sequels.
Are you shitting me?
No. It has two sequels, my friend. Yeah. So it has two sequels, Ginger Snaps Back 2, Unleashed, and a prequel, Ginger Snaps Back, The Beginning. These were filmed back-to-back in 2003. Even though Ginger Snaps 2 had a wider release than the original, it underperformed in the box office. Consequently, because of this, Ginger Snaps Back, The Beginning went direct to video. Ginger Snaps Back, The Beginning is a prequel, and it has the same actresses, but they're like in like Victorian era, and they're just playing different characters.
It's great. that's kind of cool. I can dig that.
I haven't seen that one. I have seen Ginger Snaps 2, Unleashed, and it's fine. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Trying to catch lightning in a bottle twice on that
I one, think though. So. Yeah. Because it's more focused on Bridget, because, mm-hmm. like, she's still a werewolf, and she just has to continuously give herself injections of, like, of the freaking monkshood or whatever. And, like, there's, like, she's, like, taken to, like, an insane asylum. I've only seen it once. It was fine.
Okay. It's a movie.
It's a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I would watch it if I was hungover, for sure.
Okay. I can dig that.
To this day, Ginger Snaps is a horror and feminist and golf.
And a golf? A Tiger Woods favorite movie.
Goth cult favorite. Let me do that again.
No, we're still keeping it. Goth cult favorite.
Goth cult favorite.
Not cult. Tiger Woods favorite movie.
I fucking hate you. So, Catherine.
And a golf cart movie.
Why do you hate me? I do nothing but appreciate you.
No, it's good writing. It's good.
Catherine Isabel and Katie Perkins continue to be spooky bitches, guesting on X-Files and Supernatural, and amongst other various horror movies throughout the years.
I like their categorization as spooky bitches. That's good.
It's true. I'm also a self-proclaimed spooky bitch. It's on all of my dating profiles. Yeah. Catherine Isabel also went on to star in American Mary in 2012. Check out our episode on that to hear how much we love her.
Wait, that was her?
Yeah, buddy. Whoa!
That just hit me right now.
Oh, God, I'm so glad I waited till the end to put that in there.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, Ginger is Miss American Mary herself.
Yeah, definitely check out that episode. It is a gruesome movie, but holy wow, that's cool.
She grew up to be Miss American Mary.
Dude.
12 years later.
She is a fucking icon in the shit for sure. Damn. Underrated.
Underrated. Like, she's like a total, like, indie scream queen.
She is fucking A. Okay. Yeah, Catherine Isabel, we're gonna leave you're on the list of top scream queen. No, but she takes too much agency. She's not a scream queen. She's kind of like the bad bitch.
She's a scream spooky bitch.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, John Fawcett would go on to co-create and direct the award-winning BBC television show Orphan Black, which also focuses on creepy girls who figure their shit out.
Cool. All right, John Fawcett, man, doing it for the ladies.
Yeah, pretty much. So with that, that's Orphan Black. Jesus Christ. That's Ginger Snaps. And now we have a discussion.
Okay, cool.
So now we can finally talk about this.
Hey, again, right before we get into all this stuff, guys, watch the movie. It's free.
It's really
free.
Good.
It's free.
It's like, and here's the thing, it's like so, part of it is over the top. Like, would I say that it's campy? Kind of. Yeah. Like, part of it is definitely campy.
But not in a stupid way.
It's not stupid.
No, it's campy in a smart, evil daddy kind of way sometimes.
Yes. It's like campy and like Evil Dead, like the first one. It's not like, mm-hmm. it's not like Army of Darkness campy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just, oh God. Watch the fucking movie.
Mix Evil Dead with Hocus Pocus and you got yourself like the vibe of this film.
Yeah. And it's just, like, there's, like, so many moments where it's just, like, it's so smart.
It is. It's really smart.
It's really, I mean, for me anyway. Mm-hmm. It's really smart. It's really well done. Like, the characters, like, in a movie that is very short. Like, this is, like, a, like, quick and dirty, like, again, 90-minute movie.
No, it's, like, super fast.
It's a very short movie. They establish so much like character depth in mm-hmm. that 90 minutes that it's really impressive.
It's a character movie that knows when to show you some blood and keep you going. Like for sure.
Yeah. Like, and there's some discrepancies between whether or not this is even like more of a drama, coming of age movie. We're going to get into it. It's a question, so don't answer it. All right,
I was ready to jump in there. Toss this mic. Like, you shouldn't, mate.
So there's a question in there. So we will, we'll get into it. But right off the top, I want to hear your thoughts and your experience with this movie.
Okay, so this movie was awesome.
Yeah.
It's
I'm so glad you liked it. I loved it. I was so worried.
I know. I thought it was great. And it's really unique. And again, it just it feels like pre-9/11, pre-Saw, pre-franchise horror. I mean, between franchises, obviously, because you had the Scream and
right.
you know Jason Voorhees and shit before that. But like, this is like a lightning in a bottle style horror. It does feel like Hocus Pocus a little bit sometimes.
I love that because I get what you're saying.
It's 90s.
Yeah.
It's like, but it's like late 90s where people are like kind of taking themselves seriously, but like. It still has that, like, scale that's not, like, super wide. It's not trying to, like, give you this... It's a personal movie. Like, and it's funny.
It's such a personal movie.
It's funny and gory, guys. It's funny and gory and very moving sometimes. And just interesting. Like, it doesn't let up. It yeah. doesn't let up at all. Every scene counts. And the characters are wonderful. And you want to root for all of them. Even the ones that kind of suck. And, well, except the fucking, well, yeah, no, even the girl, the bully Trina? Girl.
Yeah, yeah, even Trina, like, there are certain moments, because, like, there's that scene right before Ginger, like, wrecks her shit, where
yeah.
he's just, like, where she's calling, Sam, or, Sam? No. What's his name?
The drug dealer. The drug dealer. Sam, right?
It's his name, Sam, right? Like, yeah. I'm not totally full of shit. Okay, where, like, she called him, like a cherry hound or something.
Yeah.
And like she's just like, don't give him the satisfaction. Like she's like genuinely fucked up by this. And like you feel for her.
Yeah, well see the thing is like with the character like her, she's a total bitch for a lot of the film.
Yeah.
But then you kind of start to see like, oh, she's like she actually has some issues. Like it's not like she's just a bitch.
She's dealing with some shit.
She's dealing with some shit. She obviously has really bad judgment yeah. and is aggressive and doesn't know how to deal with things.
Yeah.
And so when it finally comes to like her meeting her end, you already kind of feel bad for her.
Well, you feel bad because also like at this point, Ginger's gone absolutely apeshit. Like
yes.
she's like, this is at the tail end of the movie mm-hmm. where like she is like absolutely like she still has, she's like fangs. Like she is
yeah.
like not doing great. So.
But, like, you know, she's a character that doesn't deserve to meet the end the way she does, I think.
Agreed.
And it's for a movie to, like, have that many layers it builds to within this short time frame and being as funny and goofy as it is.
So
like,
good.
Like, the main characters, to me, are the best. They yeah. they feel like sisters. They have that goth, like, early 2000s kind of
yeah.
just, like, fuck everything kind of. Like Daria, almost. Like, a little Daria between both of them. And I love it. Like, I think it's a good character movie that has amazing gore. And I fucking hate werewolf movies a lot of times. And I did
true.
Not hate this.
It's true. So here's the thing. Like, and it is, I'll go into my thoughts and experience of this movie. So this is not the first time I've seen this movie, mm-hmm. obviously. I've seen it many, many times. And I like what you said. It's like, it's such a deeply personal movie. And like, to be able to watch it and like, I don't know, watching it when I was like, I don't know, the first time I watched it, I was in college, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, holy shit, this is like, because again, I watched this right as I was getting into like film theory and like horror theory. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, this is so fucking cool.
It's a good intro to that kind of stuff because the elements aren't like, you don't have to peruse far.
Yes, that's, and that's the thing. It's like, you don't have to dig deep. To
no.
get to what they're trying, like, the points that they're trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, like, The Shining. It's not, like...
Yeah. But it's not, like, treating you like a dumbass. And be
no.
like, oh, this is the theme. It's more like, this is, you know, it's the theme. So
I know. It's just, it's not roundabout in
yeah.
any way. Like, yeah, sure, it's kind of on the nose. Like,
but, like, in a way that's not insulting.
No.
Yeah.
No. And it's very, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, those, like, coming-of-age elements to it. Like, it's just, like... It made me kind of reminiscent of high school.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Like, I was just like, oh, my God. Because I dressed like Bridget. Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, my God,
mm-hmm.
I did that. Like, and it was just, or, like, just, like, the way, like, she acted. There was so much of, like, her behavior where I was like, I was that weird fucking kid who, like, would just freak out anytime like a guy spoke to me, even if
mm-hmm.
it wasn't even like mildly romantic. I was just like, don't talk.
But she like plays that character so well. Like she,
yeah.
her walk,
oh,
her
my
walk.
God.
I'm just like,
I
know that walk. I know that walk. Yeah.
I am familiar with that walk.
I've done that walk when I was younger, before I learned how to talk to women.
It's called stalking. Like, not like stalking.
Yeah,
with the
but
crew,
like, but yeah,
like literally,
like you're not comfortable in your own shoes, even going from point A to point B.
No.
No.
Yeah. a lack of confidence for sure.
Head down, fucking ugh.
So, but yeah, I just, I fucking love this movie. Like, it just, I forgot how much I loved this movie because I hadn't seen it in many, many years. And DJ actually introduced me to this movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. Like,
so I hadn't seen it in a really long time. So I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm still going to like this movie. Turns out I did.
Yeah, no, this is an awesome one. I'm like into it.
I'm really glad. Since we aren't doing a Alex Webster standard plot overview, what were some of your favorite scenes?
You know, it's kind of weird. Like, I don't know, the movie flows so well.
It's hard to pinpoint, like moments, maybe?
It is. Like, the thing is, like, moments happen, but they all build to another moment. Like, it's like, it's literally everything kind of like, there's not a lot of isolated scenes besides, and the scenes that are really super isolating are very gruesome and like kind of hit you a little hard sometimes. Yeah. Like even Ginger getting attacked, which is a very well shot scene, is like brutal.
Yeah.
And like her becoming the werewolf and like all this. I couldn't look at the goddamn piercing scene.
That was rough.
Yeah.
That was like, I was just like, oh God.
No, that one got me pretty bad.
You don't like needles.
I don't like needles.
You hate needles.
Yeah, and that was like close up. Like, yeah, this is happening. But then also, I liked Bridget. Anytime Bridget and Sam were like figuring shit out, their dynamic was so good.
It was very Scooby-Doo-y.
It so was. And then even then, they were just kind of like, their chemistry wasn't so like, oh my God, I like you. Like,
it was standard. More like they were like curious about each other.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And I think there was like that level of like organic chemistry there that it wasn't like inherently like physical or like sexual attraction. It was more just like interest.
And
And that's what that actually I was like, why I really liked their relationship because they had that and it felt very like, kind of wholesome.
It did. No, it totally did. And they, you know, they have to get shit done and figure things out. And it makes sense.
And that's the thing. It's like, because there's like, because Bridget to a degree still has that like high school like mentality where I think she still kind of has that like wholesomeness factor. So I like the fact that he wasn't like trying to be a fucking creepazoid about it, which also would have made the movie very, very creepy because she is 15 in the movie.
Yeah, and he's so down to earth. Also kind of an asshole, but like in a fun way. So
he is so like, love it.
And like there's a lot to pull from.
I liked
dance.
Okay. Yeah. The dance was cool. Like, I liked in the scene right before that when Bridget and Ginger are at the school and Ginger kills the custodian.
Yeah.
And like,
she's like a perv and she was like, oh, hey, blah, blah, blah.
I think she went like the Eileen Wuornos route where like she is looking for a reason to kill someone.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think he was a perv. I think she was just like looking for a reason. Like, cause she killed him cause she says, quote unquote, I didn't like the way he looked at you.
Yeah, exactly.
And so,
she was inferring more, so like, fuck it, we'll kill him.
Yeah, there was this, oh God, where, I'm gonna have to find it, but there was like this one quote in that scene where she said something like really, but it was just like, she said something basically to akin to like, I don't need to be cured because I'm a badass. Moral of the story.
Oh, I also like, though, another scene that stuck out was the mom again trying to start over. And when she learned that everything went down, she's like, well, we're going to burn the house down. You're not going to tell your dad.
Well, and she was just like, I just want to... She, at the end of the day, like, one of the things I did really like about the mom is that she wanted to protect her kid.
Yeah, like, the state's not going to take you away kind of thing. Yeah.
Like, she, and then, you know, she's, was she trying to kill her husband? I couldn't tell.
I think it was a good excuse for her to finally do it.
Because, like, clearly they hated each other.
Oh my God, every time he was on screen, I just, it didn't feel right. That's one of the things I would it kind of felt out of place in a movie like this.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, we're going to take a break just to show how pathetic he is in their relationship, and I didn't like that.
I mean, that was, like, that's one of those, like, few moments where I was just like, this is not necessary.
Yeah, unnecessary. Totally unnecessary.
Like, it was, like, brief filler in the movie.
In fact, it would have been funny if she actually would totally pretend to be in love with him.
just to get
and
him.
And then
to
when
like,
she says that line of like, oh, and then we're gonna take out your dad and be like, what?
And then we're just gonna fucking kill him.
Yeah.
That would have been funny as shit.
Alright, so what scene about you? What's best scenes in the film?
So the scene in the hallway where she's just like on this power trip.
She's on her tire.
Yeah. She's on this like power trip. And like that scene was like really powerful to me. The beginning, like just the establishment of them and like them doing like the photo shoot. I think that was one of those movie or one of those scenes where I was just like, okay, this is going to be like that kind of movie.
Yeah.
You know? And then like when they're both sitting next to each other in the back of the class and they're just like being like little goth girls, I just thought it was, I think I was just like, okay, this is cool. Oh geez. You're right, though. It, like, blends together.
It's hard to pinpoint, like, a scene because it's such a seamless picture. Like, it really is.
Yeah.
That's why it's such a cool 90 minutes right there.
It is. It is, like, a fast 90 minutes because, like, everything just kind of, like, blends so well from, like, one thing to the other. I don't know. Yeah. The whole movie.
Yeah, I know, right?
The whole movie.
Well, that, and it's not like it's all up and up. Like, there are scenes, obviously, where like, there's just major confrontation. Like, Ginger was smoking weed with the guys in Sam's van, and that what that does to Bridget seeing her do it.
Yeah.
And, like, because it's a personal tale.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's a movie that, like, it has a plot. It, like, legit has a plot.
And that's the thing, is, like, the plot is just, like, I don't know. Like, at the end of the day, the movie is just so well written that it's relatable. Like, it's just like everyone remembers being in high school and like just feeling like, regardless of whether like you're a woman or not, just like being uncomfortable in your own skin and just being like, this sucks.
Yeah.
I hate this shit. I would like it to stop.
The guy she passed the werewolf thing to when he started getting all aggressive and weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sexually transmitted lycanthropy.
Yeah.
That's weird. Like, there's like, okay, so here's the thing. There's a couple things in this movie that I was just like, make it make sense, guys. Make, like.
Establish the rules.
Right. And because that's one of the first lines in the movie is like, Sam is just like, we can't go off of Hollywood rules.
Uh-huh. That's true.
And I'm just like, this is a Canadian?
There are no rules. Figure it out as it goes. It follows.
I guess. I mean, sure, but oh my gosh. The whole thing was just weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, did you find like the movie satirical at
mostly it was over the top. In certain ways, like the gore and everything like that, it was...
I think I found it more campy than satirical.
Yeah, satirical, because I'm not sure. I mean, it kind of, like, plays up on your expectations of what werewolf movies are, but it has such a strong general theme of growing up, coming of age to it, that it's hard to call it satire.
Except
that, like, you know, the werewolf stuff, like, it's ancillary. Like, it totally is, compared to, like, what's going on.
Yeah.
Until the end, of course.
There's... I mean, until it becomes... such a focal point of the whole fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
So the last 30 minutes, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're going to watch the movie, like, basically this movie is a coming-of-age tale up until the last 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it's a werewolf movie.
Well, see, that's the thing, though, too, because I feel like the last 30 minutes, maybe the last 15 minutes are probably the weakest part of the film.
Really?
Because the whole confrontation seemed like a little, like, it was a little
too
much.
I agree. Because, like, the interpersonal drama between Ginger and Bridget, like, was, like, the driving force
for the
whole fucking movie. And then once, you know, Ginger completely transforms, then it's just, like...
Let's wrap it up.
Once she transforms, then basically she can't talk.
Yeah, yeah. That's what kind of throws it off.
It kind of takes away, like... I would say it's not even the last 30 minutes, then. I would say probably the last... 20.
Yeah, exactly.
That. Like, it's not very long. But basically, spoiler alert, it's a 20-year-old movie.
Yeah.
But, spoiler alert.
We told you to watch it before we started the discussion.
Because I didn't do a plot synopsis. But, no, the last, like, 20 minutes is Ginger being a full werewolf, like, running amok in the house, and she can't talk.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, it becomes more of, like, a standard horror movie at that point. Which agreed. I think is what throws me off, because I feel like a resolution where Ginger could have, like, made her case probably would have been a better route to go.
I think there was a point... I think... No. I think that she lost her chance to really ever get through to Ginger.
That's true. That's
like,
true.
Because you see it. Like, she has, like almost moments of lucidity mm-hmm. where she realizes what's going on. That's when you feel for her character. And mm-hmm. I think that's one of the strong suits of this movie is what makes her character so, like, sympathetic.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, a point where she's just gone. Like, yeah. And then I think that, because, like, that's also when Bridget also kind of realizes that, like, she can stab her sister or she can inject her.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the two, like, either she, and then either she can inject her and she'll die.
Yeah.
Or she can stab her and she'll live.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, who's too far gone at this point? And then Ginger has already had this whole monologue about everything being a power trip and how, like, how powerful she feels and how she would never want to go back to being quote-unquote normal.
And even then, like, if she is back to normal, she's got to deal with all the fallout from this anyways.
Yeah. She's killed, like, 5 people.
Yeah.
She's killed so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't care.
It makes sense, the decision she makes, of course. Yeah.
It's one of those, like, perfect timing things. Like, it's just like, okay, you are just, you have a lot going on.
Yeah.
But I agree. So we've kind of hinted about it already, but what did you think about the characters?
Oh, they're almost all great.
They are.
Yeah.
But, like, did you have a favorite, least favorite?
Bridget's your favorite? I just think she's...
Really?
She's the most, like, she's so relatable.
Yeah.
She just is. And she does, I think, that her character archetype too well sometimes.
I think it's very funny that she's your favorite character because I think she's, like, the secondary major character. Like, I think Ginger's the main.
No, she's the main, yeah.
Yeah, I think Ginger's the main character. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that it's her story. Mm-hmm. And then in the second movie, it's more Bridget's story.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I think that's interesting. I think it is a tit for tat tie
with Bridget.
Bridget and Ginger, like, yeah, they are just, I love them both for very different reasons.
That's,
like,
true. They're way different.
I see so much of myself in Bridget,
mm-hmm.
and so I think that's why I like her so much. But also, Ginger is just such a well-written character.
She is, and, like, her whole tale through this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, this is also, like, one of the first times, just as a nod to how well-written these characters are, that we have used their character names instead of the actors' names.
Yeah.
I just now realized that.
But, I mean, like, the thing is, they're so, they're such teenagers.
Yeah.
Like, they're just such teenagers, like to their core.
It's
not that Hollywood, like, meh, smart-ass remark, and look, I look like I'm 32.
No, like, they look like teenagers, they sound like teenagers, they act like teenagers.
They make stupid teenage decisions that fuck everything up.
So, like, dumb teenage decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they're, like, just stupid, and they smoke cigarettes at PE, like, and wear, like, big baggy clothes, you know what I mean?
It's like, that's why it kind of feels a little like Hocus Pocus sometimes.
Well,
it's much darker.
Yeah. So, okay. Those two are my favorite. Do you have a least favorite character?
The dad and probably the guy that, like, Ginger has sex with and transfers it over the lycanthropy to him.
Sexually transmitted lycanthropy.
Yes. STL.
That's funny. Yeah, the dad, probably, for me. He's, like, such a little shithead.
He's just there.
I know. I love that the mom, like, has none of his shit. He's like, don't be such a baby. Like, oh my god.
She's actually pretty cool, though. I think the mom. Yeah.
The mom is also, like, another favorite of mine. I mean, this is such a well-written movie that the cast is incredibly likable.
Yeah, that's true. Even it's Sam too, local drug dealer. He's awesome. Yeah,
Sam. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. This isn't a large cast. Mm-hmm. Like, there isn't, like, not a lot of speaking roles in this movie. But, like, even, like, the little pack group of friends, like the dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, you guys are such dumbasses. Well,
this just came to my mind right now. All the characters, if you look at them, like, if you to throw archetypes on them, they'd be the same archetypes in, like, a Tim Burton movie. Like, they kind of have that vibe. Oh my gosh,
thank you for saying that, because it just reminded me. This movie is like Edward Scissorhands, but like so much darker.
Yes, significantly.
Like, it has like that like suburban feel to it. But
that hyper-normalization between characters and everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes,
okay. Thank you for bringing that up, because that was something that was like in my head as I was watching it. And I was just like, remember this, because you want to bring it up on the fucking podcast. No,
see, this is why we do the podcast, because we both reach it. We had the same interpretation. They're literally, it's like a Tim Burton archetypes in a whole new story. And yeah, significantly so much bloodier. Darker,
definitely, you know, Canadian.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's a different interpretation, but it has those like elements to it that like you're just like, okay, yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's like not as slick as a Tim Burton movie, but it's like an indie take on one.
Exactly. That's what I was gonna say. It's like, it's not as slick, but it has that indie feel to it that like it's raw.
Yeah. It's a good replacement for that style.
Agreed. How does this movie compare to other werewolf movies you've seen? Better, worse? We've kind of already answered
better
this.
Than like every single one of them. Yeah. All of them.
It's true.
I can't even think of one that I think is like
on par.
Not even close. Like, honestly,
I think I would this and American Werewolf in Paris.
I haven't seen American Werewolf in Paris though.
You might like it.
Okay.
It's dumb, but it's fun.
Okay. I can dig that.
So it's not like this, but like it's kind of like this. Oh my gosh, there was another one of the Letterboxd reviews was just like, this is better than all of the Howling sequels. This is better than any like.
I think, again, it's personal. Like, it's a character driven movie. It's not like, oh, look at the mystery of the werewolf. It's like, well, the mystery of Ginger.
Exactly. And it's like such a pinpointed personal story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what sets it apart from other werewolf movies. Exactly what you said. Because it's so personal, and like it focuses on something that like makes so many people uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think that's what makes it so fun for people to watch, because then it's like this, like, I don't know, kind of like exploration of that without being, I don't know, super in your face about it, but like very in your face. I don't know.
It's
like
weird. It's it tells a lot of lines, which is pretty cool. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I
dig it a lot. So the question we've been hinting at or mentioned earlier, is this a horror comedy? Is it a coming of age film? Is it a drama? What is it?
It's coming of age horror.
It's a coming of age horror film.
Because, I mean, coming of age movies, most of them have elements of comedy in them to, you know, keep you going.
Agreed. Yeah.
Even if it's a little stilted sometimes, like it definitely feels like coming of age, but again, it has that Burton-y kind of like scary movie feel to it. That's it is horror, like, not just in terms of like the theme of like having a werewolf.
Yeah, I haven't prepared my answer to this, so I'm like still kind of thinking.
I mean, the ending itself is essentially aliens in the house. It's like, yeah, it's like Ridley fighting the fucking alien in the spaceship. Like, it's the same kind of like blocking and same kind of chase.
Well, it's, for me, I think it's a coming of age drama with horror as a device.
Horror as a device, for sure. Yeah,
I don't know, because like I mean I want to say it's, at the end of the day, I do think it is a horror film. Like, I don't want to take away from that, because it is a horror film. I just think that it, because there's such a heavy emphasis on the interpersonal drama of the whole like situation, I think that has a little bit more precedence for me, anyway, in my viewing of it, than the horror. And it could just be because I watch so much of it.
Yeah.
That it kind of is just like, okay, I'm used to maul dogs all over the place.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. That's fine.
It's just like the drama of it. And I think that's actually, now that I think about it, one of the reasons that I love it so much is that it's very emotionally evocative for me. Like, it's a very emotional movie for me to watch, which is why I don't watch it very often, because I always feel fucked up by the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
It makes me very sad, because it doesn't have a very happy ending.
No, it definitely doesn't. And it's, I think, okay, so I would say it's a horror film, but the elements that support it that other horror films try to use are all super well done. And other horror films, you know, the coming of age portion of it, like, where, you know, you get the hero fucking, like, that's usually thrown to the side. The comedy's usually kind of like meh. And in this one, all those aspects are done so well compared to the rest, even compared to the horror elements, were still pretty good. So I don't know. It's hard to categorize.
It is. And that's what I wanted to kind of pick your brain about, because it is hard to categorize.
It really is. Like, yeah, I think I convinced myself out of that one.
I talked yourself out of it.
I wouldn't call it a drama, though. Definitely not. It just has dramatic elements to it.
Okay, I mean, that's fair. It just feels dramatic to me, because it feels like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh god, this is like high school all over again. It's the end of the fucking world.
That's the thing. Like, again, normal horror movies, they don't do their drama well.
That's...
like, it's usually just a device to get through, but like...
That's very true.
Yeah, this does that well, in addition to having the elements of a monster transformation and gore and all these other things.
That's very fair, because this does feel very dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And because it does it so well, I think that's what sets it apart and makes it feel more dramatic than other horror films.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean?
And it's funny.
Yeah.
It's just fucking funny.
Yeah, it's true. It's very funny. Like, it's very well written, and it's very witty and very dark. Like it has that dark humor, like that late 90s, like,
yeah,
dark humor that I fucking love.
It's a little Daria sometimes, you know? It's a little all these things.
Gosh.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Good. Love it. Anyway, and then just kind of was like a funny throwaway question. Is there too much dog death
in this movie?
Too many
dog death close-ups.
So gross.
They didn't have to have so many close-ups. They could be like, oh, cool, look. Oh, look, a dead dog in the bushes. But no, it's just like, oh, here are all the innards.
Well, that was like one of like the letterboxing. Like, they were like, must there have been so many dead dogs in this movie?
Did I have to see like the teeth hanging out and the jaws and shit?
Well, and you see it in the very beginning. And oh my gosh, that actually, I take it back. That is one of my favorite, like the opening, like the very, very,
yeah,
very beginning of the movie.
Before the neighborhood kids aren't taking her seriously.
Oh, and she's just like, well, whatever the name of the dog is. And
yeah,
she literally holding her kid falls to her knees and is screaming this dog's name. And like all the kids playing street hockey just like stop, look at her, just like, what the fuck? And then go back. And then, you know, it cuts to Bridget, who's like getting stuff from the garage. And she's just like, that's weird.
Yeah. That's a solid opening right there. Though.
I just, because it has that, and I think that's where I get a lot of, like, the campiness, I think.
Yeah.
Like, the angles that were used in that. And
it's
like,
a little Sam Raimi.
It's, I think a Raimi was involved in this in some degree.
Oh, were they?
I think so.
Interesting.
I read it somewhere. Do not quote me on this, but I did read something somewhere adjacent.
We'll confirm.
but yeah, it just was very, yeah, kind of Evil Dead.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean?
It lets you know what kind of movie it is right away.
Yeah. It lets you know how the movie's gonna go very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've got there. Rate this movie out of 5 severed fingers forgotten in the garden.
Oh my gosh, I would give it a 4.75 forgotten fingers.
All right.
In the garden.
I'll give it a 5.
Not did it going to debate the 5. Yeah.
I will give it a 5. This is one of my favorite, like, this is just, it's just such a cool, like, monster movie.
Mm-hmm.
For me. Like, is it a monster movie? Who knows? But it's, I mean, it's a werewolf movie, so I'm going to call it a monster movie. But it's not a very, like, normal movie.
No.
A normal horror film.
Definitely not.
It goes against the grain for me, and I really, really like that. And it's just fun to talk about. It's fun to think about.
Mm-hmm.
I really like it. It's definitely one of my favorites. Definitely my favorite werewolf movie. Like,
yeah,
if someone,
hands down.
If someone were to be like, hey, I want to watch a good werewolf movie, and I would be like, or want to watch a good werewolf movie, it would definitely be this movie.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
It would be my only recommendation, to be honest with you.
Like,
yeah, I'm not a werewolf guy.
So, any other praises you would like to sing to this movie?
It's free, listeners. Just watch it. Just
it's
watch
true.
It.
It's 90 minutes. We're all in quarantine. You're not doing anything else anyway.
Yeah, and if you have a Switch or something, you can like bullshit on Animal Crossing and just turn the volume down. Watch this movie.
I was like, turn the movie down.
No.
It's true, though. This is like, I will say, as much as I do love this movie, it does not demand your full undivided attention the entire time.
It's pretty visual and stuff like that, but I mean, I looked away a few times because of the graphic violence, so.
That's because Anthony doesn't like needles.
Yeah.
But, like, I was able to respond to text messages. Sometimes I would pause it, respond to text messages, and then unpause it, but that's just because I didn't want to miss anything.
Yeah.
And if you got sucked into the movie as easily as I did, that's something that, for me, because I get sucked into this movie so easily. Like, mm-hmm. that is definitely something that you will do. You're like, you don't want to miss anything. And you want to make sure you're like, is everything, like, you don't want to miss it. So, with that, I think we're good.
Yeah, ready? Next week, guys.
We talking about next week?
You guys know. Well, you maybe may not know. But every 6 months, we cover this franchise. And
it is time.
It is time for us to get back into it. So we're going to do it.
It's been 6 months already.
It's been 6 months since we did the third one. Yeah, but we're doing number four. We're doing number four next week.
So
a little bit of October's coming into April. We'll just leave it at that for now.
So with that, that was Ginger Snaps from 2000. Directed by, what's his name? John
Fawcett. Fawcett.
John Fawcett. I didn't want to mess up his name. But yes, John Fawcett. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining us this week. If you like what you heard, please, please, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It means the absolute world to us. And then it keeps everyone, you know, happy. And it keeps, mm-hmm. you know, all of our ratings boosted in the charts and stuff. And it's so, so cool that, you know, every week we get to look and see all the awesome listeners that we have all over the world. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Including Canada.
Yes, we love you, Canada. Again.
And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on everything we have going on in the podcast universe, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod. And then we're on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. And then you can find Mr. Fuentes on mm-hmm. Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And then you can find me, Alex Webster, on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
Bam.
And I think that's it for this week. Thank you so much, everyone. And we will catch you next week. Stay safe.
Catherine Isabel is a goddess.
It's true. Catherine Isabel is a goddess. Wash your fucking hands and don't go wandering into the woods.